car magazine, so it's pretty much the primary focus at the moment.
Cool.
You've got a lot of Fender Telecaster signature models.
I do.
Indeed. How did the triple J5 come about?
You know, I just wanted that kind of collaborating the Gibson Black Beauty with the Telecaster, you know, because that great three pickup Black Beauty, you know, like Ace is using it on the cover of Alive, or, you know, the Peter Frampton or the Keith Richards, you know, those late 50s type style, you know, which I have a Gibson like that, and I wanted to mix it with the Tele.
Yeah.
And it sounds killer, you know. I'm really happy with how it came out and how it performs. It's really a badass machine.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds, as you say, Gibson. Like, Fender Telecasters are generally known for a much brighter sound.
Yes.
So, did you have to alter the pickups much at all?
I did, you know, and I've started using the Tele in, like, some heavier situations, obviously.
Mm.
Which, you know, it hasn't really... I'm not taking credit for it at all, but it wasn't really done that much. You know, and I started doing it in Manson. I mean, you always had it in, of course, it was most popular in country and rock, you know, Stones and Steely Dan, and even, you know, Led Zeppelin's first record used the Tele, but it was never really in metal. It was kind of like wearing a cowboy hat to a Slayer concert or something like that. You just don't do it, you know. So that's when I started doing it with, you know, in Manson, started using that Tele. And it just worked, because it's a great guitar, you know. It's a massive, it's our first solid body electric guitar, and it's just a mean guitar. It's just a working man's guitar, and it's one of my favorite things in life.
Excellent. Yeah, it's funny you mention it not being seen as necessarily a metal guitar, because I remember Richie Kotzen started playing them, and then, you know, you got Jim Root from Slipknot as well. And it's sort of, you know, they can play what they like, I guess.
And hopefully, you know, we'll see more of them, you know, because it's just a great guitar, and it's hasn't really changed since 1950.
Yeah, definitely. Why did you choose that over, say, Gibson, just out of interest?
You know, when I was a kid, I saw a TV show, a very, very little kid, and I wanted an electric guitar. And I saw this guy playing a Telecaster, and I just thought that was what an electric guitar was a Telecaster. I didn't think that there was anything else. So I was like, that's what I want. You know, and it could be a boy seeing a bike or a car or a wagon or something. And that will always stick in your head, and that's what always stuck in my head was a Tele.
Okay. What about the double neck one with a baritone?
Oh, man, I love it. It's so rad. It's just got the best sound to it. You know, there's certain guitars that sound good, certain guitars that don't, obviously. But for some reason, that one sounds so good. But, man, is it heavy. It's totally, you know, I call it scoliosis because it's just, you know, so heavy. But it sounds incredible, you know.
Yeah.
I'm definitely bringing it to Australia. So.
Yeah, how does the neck hold up on that for a baritone?
I'm sorry?
Did you have to change the neck specifications for a baritone?
Oh, absolutely. You'll get to meet it when you're in Australia, you know. You'll get to say hello to the guitar. So, yeah, it's a mean, mean monster. I love it so much. And there's, you know, there's a lot of chrome on it with that big old pick guard. It's just so cool. And you don't really see a lot of double neck Teles now and again, you know. They're pretty rare to see a double neck Tele, but it's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that Rob Zombie that you're turning up with Soundwave.
So excited.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be great. I mean, how do you deal with your specific equipment? You know, worrying about like your double neck guitars not getting nicked and stuff in the festival.
Well, that's a great question. What, you know, I'm the kind of guitar player that will play through anything. I don't need to have a special amp. I don't need to have a special cord or anything like that. I'm just renting, I think, a bunch of amps over there. You know, I only use like three pedals, but I'm taking all my guitars. I'm taking all my guitars, and But I have this big Rode case, and they all kind of fit. They don't fit in the cases. It's like a big guitar stand that just closes up. So that's how I'm gonna do it, and just it should be fine. You know, I've shipped many times over there before. I think this will be like my fourth time over there, so I'm really really excited about it.
Okay, cool. You've got some blues elements that are in there, particularly with Rob Zombie. There's a bit in, I think it's Mars Needs Women.
Yeah.
How does Rob feel about the melding of, you know, industrial metal with shuffle blues?
Well, I think there's a little ZZ in there, a little ZZ Top with the picking and stuff like that. And in the beginning, there's that acoustic thing, and it's kind of like a Jimmy Page thing, you know, and I played it on a D45. And, you know, he's great because he loves music, too. He's very educated with music, and he's, I just love everything about the guitar and old musicians and things like that. I even played a old Dobro, a 1940s Dobro on this song called Werewolf Baby, and we just distorted the hell out of it. It's really rad, you know. We slash the speakers, and we just really experimented with a lot of sound. So it was a really fun record to make.
Oh, it makes it more interesting, that's for sure.
It does.
Do you think you'll ever bring in, say, a B-bender or something like that?
You know, it's so funny you say that. The guy that books our tour asked me the same thing. He wanted to know, because I have so many Telecasters, but I don't have a B-bender. And he asked me, you're the second person that's asked me about a B-bender in the week, you know, which people never ask me about it. I got to get one now, because I don't have I usually do the bends behind the nut, you know.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of that stuff on my instrumental records, and, you know, I do it in my guitar solo, too. But, yeah, I got to get a B-bender now. Up over there.
Excellent. Yeah, just on the Art of Malice, how'd you get a hold of Billy Sheehan?
You know, it is a small world, the music world here in Los Angeles. You know, everybody knows everybody. Everybody respects everybody. You know, it's strange to see, you know, you'll see Steve Vai at a restaurant, or you'll see Mick Jagger out buying clothes or something like that, which it sounds strange to say, but that's how it really is out here, you know. But I just started becoming friends with all my heroes, which I never thought what would happen, you know, but it's the truth. I guess when you get to, you know, getting to playing in this game of music, you meet a lot of people, and, you know, 9 out of 10 people are very, very, very cool, and you have little relationships with them because you have such respect for them, and it just works, you know. Hey, Steve, you want to come play on a record? Sure. Okay. You know, it's pretty much that easy.
Yeah, I understand. The thing with your dig is it's got very similar to Steve Vai's audiences listening, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
Just on that, was it, when you were playing with David Lee Roth, was it kind of daunting, you know, filling the shoes of Vai and Van Halen?
It wasn't, because how it all happened. And the reason the song is called You Dig is because, you know, David Lee Roth is one of my great friends, and I've known him now for 10 years, and I still talk to him all the time. But he always says, if he's talking, he always says, you dig, instead of you know. If I'm saying a story, oh, I just got this new amp, you know?
Yeah.
He says, I just got this new amp, you dig. So that's why I called it You Dig. And because it is me paying thanks and tribute to Van Halen and, you know, the time he worked with Steve Vai, and that's why I wanted to get Billy on a song like that, you know, because it totally changed my life, that stuff that, you know, Van Halen and the Eat 'em and Smile and Skyscraper and all that stuff, you know, and I just wanted to pay tribute to it.
Okay, fair enough. But I suppose the difference between working with, say, David Lee Roth and Rob is that Rob's more collaborative.
Rob is, like, seriously, and I'm not just saying this, I'll always say this, Rob is the best person I've ever worked for in my life, and he's, like, my brother, and I would work with no one else, you know, ever again. I'm going to work with Rob until he's, you know, done with music. And he's been the coolest, nicest, easiest, fun, the smartest person to work for. You know, he's so human, and I love that about, you know, he's always working, doing a movie or a record or a script or, you know, it's he's like the president. He's like just always on the go, always working.
Okay, so if you compare that to, say, Manson, what were the production lessons that you learned from Marilyn?
Well, you learn something from everybody. And with him, I learned a lot about recording, a lot about touring, a lot about what to do and what not to do. But I'm so happy that I played with Manson because he really kind of made me what I am. You know, he gave me the name John Five. And,
sure.
you know, he really taught me a lot about what to do and what not to do, and I cherish, you know, every day I was with him, and I learned so much.
And with the touring aspect of it, how did you learn to, you know, move around the stage and avoid pyro at particular times and things like that?
You know what, I'm still learning that because I broke my foot just 3 weeks ago on stage. Crazy up there. I mean, if you've seen any of the Rob Zombie stuff, like we have a new video called Mars Needs Women, you can kind of get an idea of what it's like, but it's so crazy up there. I mean, I've seen a lot of concerts and I've been to a lot of concerts, and this, it's like 60 gags in 60 minutes. I mean, it's unbelievable to see. It's hard for me to keep my eyes off the stage because there's so much going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine it's a war zone.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
Do you play much of rig stuff? You know, the previous guitarist for Rob?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Do you play a lot of the previous back catalogue as well that Riggs played?
Oh, absolutely,
Riggs played?
Yeah. Of course. Absolutely. I mean, of course, the great songs. And, you know, I think I met Riggs a few times, but yeah, I love that era, of course.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to ask about the production and writing side of it. How do you go about writing a riff and presenting it to somebody like Rob?
Well, you kind of get an idea of what they're looking for and what they like, and you just play a bunch of stuff until they say, oh, I like that, or I don't like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's what I'll usually do, and it's great, because I write with so many people. And you kind of just kind of know what they're looking for. You know, you just talk to them and, you know, you kind of get an idea. And usually, you know, 10 out of 10 times it's worked for me. So it's been great.
No, it's excellent. It's excellent. It's very good. You've given the pedal side of things. You've even got a signature Samson Tech. Is that right?
Yes.
Is there anything else, or that's pretty much, you know, the...
That's pretty much it. I didn't really get into the pedal thing. I think I'm going to put out like a real signature pedal, you know. I don't know with who yet, but I want to, instead of just putting out a distortion or a chorus or a phaser or something like that that sounds like every other phaser, chorus, or distortion pedal, I want to do something different, you know, and I kind of want to make it very unique, you know, like kind of like you can only get this sound if you get this pedal, you know. There's so many distortion pedals, there's so many choruses and flangers and delays and things like that, but I want to kind of do something special. You know, I like to think out of the box a little bit, you know, same thing with like playing a telly or, you know, playing country music with crazy makeup on your face, you know, but I kind of want to do that with a pedal and make something very unique and very, you know, hopefully revolutionary and, you know, that people will get excited about.
Yeah, fair enough. Because what I was going to ask about that is with, you know, things like distortion and stuff, and you doing things outside the box, how much effects do you put on the actual dry signal as opposed to at mixdown?
Well, you know, I don't use a lot of effects. And the reason why, some kid said, oh, John Five, he's all effects. And I was so shocked, and that stuck with me for so long that I never, ever hardly use effects. I mean, I even barely use a crybaby, you know, a wah-wah pedal, you know, but I just have my distortion, I have my chorus, and I have my wah, and that's about it, you know, but I rarely use them. So, you know, even with distortion, I have my distortion on pretty low. But the greatest sound I ever heard was I saw AC/DC live, and it sounded so good. And I think what it was is the guitars weren't that distorted, like the Who or something, or AC/DC. They're not really that distorted, but it sounds so good loud. You know?
Yeah, I understand. Pretty much getting near the end of the interview, so just to go on that with the clear sound, there's a lot of country playing, which is really, really quite difficult. How much time did you have to spend to, you know, get that under your fingers?
Well, that's all I do is sit and watch TV and play guitar. It really is. It's just a pleasure for me. All I do is play, and I try to learn something new every other day. And I love to learn, and I love to practice. And right before this interview, I was playing. I'm working on this, like, flamenco, Spanish-style type of playing, and I just love it. You know, it's just what I always do, and it's just, you know, if I was, you know, doing anything else, I'd still be playing guitar all the time. You know, it's just what I love to do.
I just remember reading an interview with Ritchie Blackmore saying that when he was, you know, going to the States, he was into country music, and he thought he was going to get, you know, completely nailed by these massive players over there.
Yeah. Oh man, they're it's wicked over here. I'll tell you. You know, it's really fun. But the reason I do it, I try to educate these younger kids. You know, there's something more than just, you know, doing tapping. You know, there's banjo rolls and behind the nut bends and pedal steel licks and, you know, hybrid picking, and there's, you know, everything like that. You know, there's so much to learn out there. And hopefully I've inspired one or two people, you know, and that's what it's all about.
Excellent.
Have people listen to this stuff.
Mate, very final question for you. Ace Frehley's Fractured Mirror. Has Ace heard it yet?
Ace has heard it, and, you know, that was one of the first songs I heard when I was a little kid, you know, first guitar instrumental song, and I just loved it so much. You know, and Ace is a great friend of mine, and I have played it for him, and he loved it. And also, you know, when I did Welcome to the Jungle, Slash has heard it, and Axel heard it. So I've been getting thumbs up from everybody I do a cover from.
Excellent. It is good.
Thank you.
What was the guitar that you used on it?
I actually used a Les Paul. And my signature Telecaster. So I did one with a Les Paul and one with my main Telecaster.
Oh, okay, I see. Righto. All right, look, thanks very much for your time, mate.
Oh, thank you very much.
Not a problem. See you on tour.
Okay, take care.
Cheers, bye.
Bye-bye.